Today's February 22nd, 2026. Current Bitcoin price is $67,368.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
So we're down from our last episode.
Slightly.
Yeah, slightly. Not a huge amount. But it's been an interesting time again. I think we're seeing the pattern, right? Like we're hitting up against 70,000 over the past week. We see it hit 70, it can't quite make it, gets rejected back down. And then it climbs back up to like the 65 range. So, I mean, we're trading basically sideways and down. We've talked about this before. When you have a support, which it seems like 60,000 currently has been the support level, as it continues to bounce off that, eventually it's going to break it, right?
Right. So basically, you're saying in the long way around, expect lower prices in the not too distant future?
Yeah, I wish I could say opposite. And some of the news that we're going to pull kind of points a different story, but man, and you know, I hate to be bearish at all, and I hope I'm wrong.
But, you know, I'm kind of hoping you're wrong, but at some point though, it's got to really find its bottom.
Yeah,
and I don't know what the narrative on Bitcoin finding its bottom. I mean, the previous time it was the FTX crash. Previous time before that was the COVID crash. I'm just kind of curious to see what the narrative's going to be, but it's searching for it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's definitely, it's in the hunt. Right. How are our theoreticals doing?
Slightly worse than last time. So, first theoretical, if you would have bought Bitcoin back in October, 2023, more towards the end of October, you could have purchased $3,000 of Bitcoin. That Bitcoin today would be worth $5,962. So for the longest time, it was twice the value that we bought it at, and now it crossed below it.
So we're below the $6,000.
We're below the $6,000. So it's still, I mean, we're complaining about almost doubling now instead of, well, we did see it triple at one point. So, you know, it's come down quite a bit, but it's still doing great. Second theoretical purchase, it's still above water, but just barely.
Okay.
If you would have bought Bitcoin back in it was $64,000 at April 19th, 2024 at the halving. And we've seen it almost double during the peaks of the market, but now it's come back down. That $1,000 is now worth $1,054.
So barely. You were right, just barely.
Just barely.
I think the lowest we've seen it is the first time we recorded after the crash. Yeah, back on February 5th, it was at $1,017. We're barely above that mark. So that's not good. We were chatting about the ETFs. Still. I mean, there's not really any positive inflows to speak of over the last, 17 days. It looks like we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days in the black.
Yep. And they're kind of minuscule numbers compared to the red for the most part. Yeah. It's definitely getting dominated downward. So
go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think you're previous assessment, seeing it kind of reach a new lower high and a lower low, a new lower high and a lower low. That's the trend that we're seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. We're ping ponging between the 60 to 70,000 range. And I don't see the upward momentum that we need to break out of that. There's been a lot of different news about the Clarity Act. And it still looks like maybe by April, I think is what they're kind of currently saying. We'll get some legislation on that. I don't know if that's going to be like what we need to see some sort of a positive tailwind to get behind Bitcoin. But I don't, and here's the thing, right? And we've talked about this. In a bear market, it doesn't matter. Even if you get positive news, it won't react to the price. You know, the price won't react to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like it'll just continue to kind of grind down. Like you may get temporary pops, whatever the case may be, but there's a lot of stuff that's interesting, and there's a lot of things that are at odds with each other. There's one thing, like they're saying, and this is from market analysts. This is by no means what we're finding on our own. They're saying that the smart money is flipping bullish. The CME futures have shifted. Basically they're saying there's a potential possibility for a rebound. Large speculators on the CME have rapidly unwound the net short positions, historically a precursor to major Bitcoin bottoms. Analysts note that similar positioning shifts preceded a 70% rally in 2025 and 190% surge in 2023. Right now it's Bitcoin is riding on its 200 week EMA. And usually that's typically the major cycle floor, but I don't know if I would trust that. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I think we have a little bit lower to go. I don't know how much longer this is going to go. This has been, like I said, we always say this, it's a weird cycle. Previous cycles, you know, I think we found a floor kind of late in the fourth year. Like, so it'd be, generally speaking, be like sometime October 2026 this year. But I'm not sure if that's going to follow. And I think part of the thing that threw us off is the run-up lasted quite a bit longer in this cycle as well.
And it happened before.
Yeah.
It happened before it should have happened. If that
it happened
sense.
Before the halving.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually the run-up happens sometime after the halving. This one, I mean, look at a theoretical purchase at the halving. It's treading water right now.
Yeah. And we wouldn't, I think based on our previous experience and what we talked about and what you're just now mentioning, we wouldn't expect it to be kind of that low until September of this year.
Right.
So we're ahead of schedule in some way.
Yep.
I think, is that what you're kind of trying to say?
Yeah, basically. So, I mean, I'm hoping that this is kind of, I think it will flush itself out. There's all sorts of things happening in the world where, you know, governments are going to be turning on the printing presses. I don't think it's going to last this, the winter is going to last as long this time.
Yeah.
That's my theory.
Yeah. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day and they were talking about, you know, do I go ahead and sell? And I'm like, depends. I told them, I was like, I wouldn't sell now. You already missed your top, right? Like if unless you need the money now, don't do it now. I would wait it out. But I mean, at the same time, is that why? I don't know. I'm not a financial advisor. We had said, and that's the thing. When you're in it, like when we had said at the beginning of the year, last year, I think we had said September, October, we're going to peak.
Mm-hmm.
We did. We just didn't hit as high as we thought.
Nope. We thought we had more gas in that tank. We thought, you know, I mean, we're being conservative saying it was going to go up to 150.
Yeah.
And apparently we weren't conservative enough.
Right. And we thought we were being ultra conservative. Well, I thought we were being ultra conservative. And that was the thing is like, we weren't caught up in the sentiment at the emotion at the moment. Cause I think even if you go back and look at our episode in October, beginning of October, we were like, oh man, like government shutdown. Yeah. Go for it, man. Like apparently that's great for Bitcoin. And it wasn't a week later that we started to see the crazy churn out.
Yep.
And we were never able to get back out.
And then the top basically that week as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that was the thing is that, and I think we both thought, well, you know, this is temporary. We'll go back up in a way. I don't think we were completely sold that it was done. It felt too odd. Again. So I think that's where that, you know, that long-term outlook, I think, was wiser. Not so caught up in the current sentiment in the moment. So, you know, again, not financial advice, but I told that person that I was speaking with, I said, if you don't need the money right now, I would wait because it will turn around. It's just a matter of time. And she's like, you think it will? And I said, yeah, it will. But
Well, I would tell her it bottoms out sometime this year.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. It finds a bottom this year. Now, what time this year is it going to find its bottom? How low is it going to be? That's the real question.
Exactly. I mean, could you theoretically buy or sell now and then buy back in at, even at the very bottom? It's possible. I mean,
yeah, but most people are running for the hills when it finally hits its very, very bottom.
Yeah, like, the sentiment's got to be like, oh my God, this is never going back up.
Yeah, like the last time when the FTX crash happened and Bitcoin hit basically 15 grand. I mean, everyone else was just saying, don't buy now, wait until it's 10 grand because it's going there next, you know? And that's not how it happened.
No. And I didn't expect that. I figured 20 was going to be our floor, 19 to 20. Yep. That was what I predicted was going to be the floor. And then it went down to 15. And I was like, ooh, that hurt.
That did hurt.
Other news with that and that kind of sentiment, Robert Kiyosaki is buying Bitcoin right now. And those of you that don't know, he wrote, Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Yes.
He's citing U.S. debt concerns and long-term scarcity as his cover thesis as to why, and continues to frame BTC as a hedge against fiat debasement, which I think we share that sentiment.
Yes.
Another in whale news, and this is always the weird one because whales are typically, they're done selling. Typically they sold at the top. That's traditionally how it happens. But whale wallets have added 200,000 additional Bitcoin over the past 2 months, signaling confidence despite volatility. Historically, whale accumulations during corrections has preceded recoveries, of course, but that doesn't mean we're bottomed.
Nope. I mean, if you have enough money to be accumulating now, maybe you'll make your giant gains here shortly.
Yeah, I mean, it by no means does it mean just because they're accumulating now means that they've deployed all their dry powder.
Exactly.
They could be buying as it's going down. Last kind of big news that kind of happened within Bitcoin was Bitcoin-backed bonds actually hit Wall Street. So crypto lender LEDN sold $188 million in Bitcoin-backed security bonds, the first of its kind in the ABS market, a sign of deepening institutional financialization in the market. So, but I mean, $188 million, that's nothing.
No.
It's going to take a lot more than that with the price when you get as high as what Bitcoin's at right now. So, I don't know. There was a lot of different outlooks of the pricing, but I don't think any of them are bearish enough. And we were kind of discussing that in the beginning. Short-term outlook, Bitcoin is hovering near 67,000. Analysts are watching the 66 to 70,000 band as the key battleground, which we kind of talked about. It can't get beyond the 70 mark is what it seems like. Some models see a near-term range of 62 to 71,000 over the next week. Yeah, maybe. And based on some other information that may continue out for what, in a month? That's 62 to 71. Tom Lee is saying that Bitcoin is looking at, for the medium term, so for the remainder of 2026, or I guess the end of 2026, Tom Lee is seeing 200,000 to 250,000 driven by institutional inflows. The moderate range is JP Morgan is modeling 170,000 based on BTC to gold parity by the end of 2026. And then the bearish one right now currently is CryptoQuant warns of a possible retrace to 56,000 if demand weakens.
No, I think 50,000 is definitely in our future.
And then one last one, the extreme bear case. And this is coming from Bloomberg's Mike McGlone. He warns of a potential drop towards 10,000 if a severe unwind happens.
Holy crap.
That's extremely bearish. I think that's even more bearish than what you would say.
Yeah, no, I mean, if it does hit anywhere in that neighborhood, I'd be like, at that point, we'd be questioning our decisions in life, right?
I think it's happened to me before with Bitcoin, but it's always proved me right in the longer lens. It's just, man,
well,
it's
yeah.
Typical.
I mean, you've watched it happen to the 2020 COVID crash in March.
Yeah.
I mean, it hit $3,000 from a high of almost 20.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty brutal.
Yeah. I've told you before, like I was sitting outside on my back porch, like, did I make the right decision? Am I an idiot? Am I a fool? Yeah. But it's always kind of come back every time. And then, you know, and then some. It's not just that it comes back and reclaims where it was. It just, this bull market, we've talked about this, has just felt so different. Long-term case, when we're looking at 2030, Kathy Woods is actually, she's kind of pulled back her long-term price prediction. She was often saying, you know, Bitcoin is going to be $1 million by 2030. Right now, she's saying the base case is $710,000. By 2030. Bull case is at 1.5 million and the bear case by 2030 is 300,000.
Wait. The base case is 110,000?
No, 710.
710, sorry. Okay.
Yeah. Base case 710, bull case 1.5, bear case 300,000. How do those numbers make you feel? What do you think? 2030.
I mean, base case, I think that's probably more on track. I do think it'll be somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 million by then, but 2030, I mean, it feels like it's not really that far away now. I mean, we're already in 2026.
Yeah.
Not crazy. But then also in 2030, I mean, that's another 4 years, probably going to be hunting another cycle low at that point.
Yeah. If we plot that out, what are we looking at? So we're a little bit over a year and some change from halving, right?
Right.
So we've got we're saying October, traditionally October of this year would have been the bottom. We would have started our climb back up to where, when the halving would be next, 2028. Is that right?
The next halving?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 2028 would be the halving, about a year after that, which would be 2029. We'd probably be looking at our peak, October 2029. So by 2030, you're right. We'd probably be starting back into a bear scenario again.
Yep. That'd be our crypto winter.
Yeah. So maybe that 300,000 is more right on for what we'd be seeing towards the end of 2030.
Maybe.
Well, but man, could you imagine that if it had already gone up to like 1.5 million in like 2029, 2028, and then it goes to 300,000, like people are going to lose their minds.
For sure. But then we'll be, I mean, from that perspective, it's like, man, we're going to just buy as much Bitcoin right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the low we're looking at is 300 grand in 4 years. What kind of dummy are you?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Like, I mean, now you can still get it while it's in the 5-figure range, but when it's in that 6 figures, you're like, ooh, it's going to hurt.
6 figures and then 7.
Which means, I mean, honestly thinking then, which means the ultimate bear case for 2030 would probably be around 124,000, maybe 100,000.
Yeah.
Thinking about that, like if we retrace the way that we typically do. But that's assuming we don't get down to $10,000 this cycle, because that would be really weird.
That would be terrible.
Yeah. CPI data. So we got CPI data for the month of January, and it actually came in a little bit cooler than expected. So headline CPI was 2.4% year over year versus the 2.5%, which was expected. Core CPI was at 2.5% year over year. That's the lowest it's been since 2021.
Really?
Yep. Gasoline prices fell 7.5% year over year, helping offset sticky shelter and food costs. Of course, food and shelter are always expensive. And that's the lowest inflation data we've had since May of 2025. Which, I mean, we've talked about that. We don't trust the numbers anyways.
No. Everything's always getting revised, and yeah.
One of the other things that I know we've talked about this before as well was we just had the Supreme Court rulings on the tariff decisions. What do you make of that? Like, how do you think that's going to play out?
Well, it still looks like Trump is going to take his ball and go home and do what he wants. So I don't know how much it matters at the, in the end of, the, of things. I mean, he's basically just trying to use a different law to push his tariffs. And then he increased them kind of out of spite,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the news that I read. But I'm like, I don't know. I don't really think the tariffs are necessarily a good thing. I don't think it's helping our economy. I think it's harming our reputation elsewhere. So...
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, what is it worth? Like, if we're, to me, I honestly feel like we're trying to desperately make sure, because as we've seen, and this may go into a little bit conspiracy area, but as we've seen the dollar de-dollarization, I guess, basically the world, we've talked about that with the BRICS and some other things that have started to rise up. The tariffs seem like another way to try and help hold that on for longer. In some weird way, as well as helping kind of reduce the deficit without raising taxes, but at the same time still imposing a tax on the American people. So I don't know. It's caused so much tension for the little bit like that we're apparently we've been able to get, because we were talking about that kind of before we started recording. I don't think we'd ever be able to eliminate federal income tax based off the tariffs.
No. No, I mean, the tariffs are a drop in the bucket. I mean, there was a time when that's tariffs and duties and that kind of stuff is what funded the federal government. That was before the income tax in the late 1800s, early 1900s. But after the income tax is passed, you know, government in the federal budget just has exploded. And it's only gotten worse after the, basically, when they took the dollar off the gold standard in 71.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no putting this genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, and I can't imagine, like, they're not reducing the spending. They just keep on increasing it. So if they find another way to get income with tariffs, I don't see them being like, oh, you know what, we can cut federal income tax because now we have more than enough money. No, the government is a hungry, hungry hippo.
Right.
It'll just keep consuming whatever you've given it. It's not going to, like, there's been several times in the past, you probably know the dates, but we've probably done something like that where federal income tax was just temporary. And was that World War One? Or was that Civil War?
That was pre-World War One. It passed in 1913. We entered the war, I think, in 1916. Does that sound right?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, the war had been going on for several years and starting in 1914, but we took a couple of years to get down there. And, you know, when they passed the income tax, they just said, hey, we're only going to tax the top, you know, 10% of the population. And you look at how things worked out and it's, you know, the top 1% or the top, you know, the wealthiest people have all the crazy tax breaks and they have, you know, teams of accountants and lawyers to basically reduce their taxes as much as possible, whereas, you know, the common man pays, you know, whatever his percentage is, and he doesn't really get a break at all.
Yeah, common man has no assets. I mean, that's one of the things you got to think about, like, whenever people talk about taxing the billionaires, and I do think it's stupid to tax unrealized gains. I agree on that wholeheartedly, because when you look at that, then you're like, okay, well, I'm going to sell. I've got to sell Bitcoin because I made money, but I didn't sell, right? Like, so the money is still in Bitcoin. Meanwhile, so say in 2026, you got to pay a tax on any potential gains that you may have made in 2025, even though you never sold. So you're looking at that, and we exited the market in 2025 at 90,000. Luckily, I mean, 2025 is a good example where we kind of entered about 90,000, exited about 90,000. So, you probably wouldn't have a huge amount, but if we had entered, like, at say 30,000, went up to 126 and closed out the year to 126 and then crashed now, you would have to pay gains on that theoretical amount that you would have made money off of if you would have sold. If you didn't sell, now you've got to sell at this lower price if you don't have any other cash backed up to pay the tax bill.
which is pretty asinine.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking about this theoretical tax on, you know, on instead of income on wealth. It sounds kind of crazy, but I think Netherlands just passed that.
They did.
That type of tax bill, right?
They did. And it's something like, and it's a, like a 36% tax.
Good grief. On theoretical gains.
On theoretical gains. So you, I mean, you are, you, especially, like I said, when I think about that with Bitcoin, like it just, it drives me insane, because then you have that where if we would have exited 126,000, we entered at 30,000, exited at 126. This year now we've tanked off like in no time, right? Meanwhile, that makes you, means you have a tax bill that you're liable for from this $30,000 to $126,000 gain that you never cashed in on.
Right.
But meanwhile, the money, like if you don't have any other cash and you're going to have to sell Bitcoin to make that happen, you're going to have to sell at $60,000 to pay that tax liability that you never got to benefit from.
Nope.
And yeah, that really bothers me.
It's going to crush anybody who's trying to build up any savings through Bitcoin. And well, it's also going to crush a lot of people who are just semi-wealthy. You know, they have a couple of, maybe they own a couple of houses and that they're renting them out and stuff like that. But at a certain point, they're going to have to just sell them to pay their taxes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's insanity. It's insanity.
That, and that's scary. Like, especially when you think about that, like, you know, the Democrats right now are wanting to run that playbook. You're seeing it in New York right now with Mondami. AOC has talked about that, you know, wanting to tax unrealized gains, which, and I get it, right? Like when you got somebody like Elon Musk, he's not selling his shares of Tesla whenever he wants to get some cash. He's taking out a loan with his stock as his liability or his asset to kind of back it with, right? And they're not taxing the loan, which, okay, whatever. But it's like, there's got to be something better than just taxing unrealized gains.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's, and because again, you're going back to you're punishing anybody. Like at that point, why would you want to keep anything in the stock market? And the only way you can get ahead is if you have money in the stock market with assets or with, you know, with gold or silver, anything that's a hard asset. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's going to get me on my soapbox there, but that's the scary part. Apparently with the Supreme Court ruling, it looks like I think up to 2/3 of the tariffs that Trump has received are considered illegal. Trump responded by announcing a new 10% global tariff under a different statute. Markets initially welcomed the clarity, but analysts warned the tariff landscape is now in flux. Equities saw a modest relief rally as uncertainty briefly eased. Economists warned that the new tariffs could reignite inflation later in the year. Corporate treasury desks are preparing for long, messy refund process. So that's the other big thing. It's like now these companies that may have paid tariffs that they didn't have to, they're going to have to file a refund process through the government. And it could take up to a year to even see some of that money come back. Even partial tariff refund can increase corporate liquidity, indirectly supporting risk assets, which, I mean, I guess that wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing. The new tariff stick, they would add inflationary pressure, delaying Fed cuts and short-term drag on Bitcoin over that period. And then the last thing that we kind of wanted to touch on was one of the other things that's leading to some economic uncertainties, Iran.
Yes. Depending on what you're listening to, there's actual reports that we're preparing to attack Iran right now.
Yeah.
At least the United States, I should say. And I mean, I think that's just bananas. I mean, I don't think Iran could necessarily survive if we decided to attack them, but they do have access to several of our bases in the Middle East. We have lots of troops deployed out there. And last time they sent some warning shots at the last time they bombed us, but they also called, you know, they called the United States. It was kind of more just of a show of,
like we couldn't take the slap without giving some sort of a slap back.
Yeah. It was kind of a saving face gesture.
Yeah.
So they did fire rockets at Americans, but they also warned them before they fired them.
Yeah. They basically said, we're going to fire here, here, and here.
Yeah.
At this time.
And they didn't have to be. Yeah. that time, that last time in the quote unquote 10-day war or whatever they're calling it.
Yeah.
You know. But the 10-day war did not fix the issue because they were complaining about, you know, enriched uranium. And really, I think it's more about regime change. And that's what the United States and Israel want. And so that's what they're pushing for. And the thing with America is we can really devastate, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq to the most part. We can destroy their military. We just can't control its territory. Yeah. When it comes to Iran, I think we can pretty well destroy their military, but we don't have the dominance to just completely smash them. No matter what they do, they can't hurt us back. That's a different type of war that we're looking at. And it's going to cost many of our service members their lives, if that's the case.
Yeah, I agree. And I was going to ask you this question. And I know this isn't necessarily related to Bitcoin, but this is economic type information. Do you think like Russia and China would get involved in the same way that we've gotten involved with Ukraine? Like where it's a proxy war on their part? I don't know if Russia would have the time. Like that's my first concern. Like, I don't know if they have the manpower, but China definitely could.
Yes. China could definitely help out in certain places. Yeah. I mean, it could basically just turn into another, Ukraine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we're definitely destroying towns and we're, you know, messing things up. But, you know, Russia's been in Ukraine for what, 3 years now?
Yeah.
I mean, they control a lot of the territory on the eastern side of Ukraine, but I mean, it just seems to be dragging out. I mean, that's another situation they could do. Or at a certain point, they just say, screw it. And it escalates into World War III with a thermonuclear warfare.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I hate to say it, but the religious zealots that currently control Iran, I could see them definitely, if they got their hands on a nuke, I could see them letting it off the chain. If they felt like they were threatened enough to be disposed, I don't think they would care, especially about the loss of life in Israel.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't even chalk it up to just religious zealotry. I would chalk it up just to last ditch. You know, any government, whether it's, you know, Mexico, United States, or any government, if it looks like they're about to lose, they're going to just go for maximum pain on their way out.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like Israeli officials are, believe, a U.S. joint venture. Israeli strike is increasingly likely. Former CIA officer claims the U.S. may be preparing to strike on Iran within days, citing insider conversations. Iran has warned the U.N. it will respond decisively to any U.S. aggression and considers all U.S. regional assets legitimate targets. Oil markets are reacting. Pricing jumped on fears of regional conflict. The macroeconomic impact, oil prices have spiked. Even a brief disruption in the Strait of Hormuz could send crude sharply higher. Energy-driven inflation, higher fuel and transport costs would ripple through the global economy. Delayed Fed cuts, rising inflation expectations could push rate cut timeline further out. And then risk-off volatility, equities would likely sell off sharply in early signs of conflict, which Bitcoin would fall into that category. War scares typically, so the implications for Bitcoin, short-term volatility, war scares typically trigger a flight to safety. USD and treasury strengthen. Bitcoin can only dip initially. Medium-term inflation hedge. If oil spikes, inflation reaccelerates. Bitcoin's digital gold narrative strengthens, especially with CPI already cooling and the Fed looking at reasons to delay cuts. Geopolitical hedge narrative. Bitcoin historically benefits when geopolitical instability undermines trust in traditional systems. A U.S.-Iran conflict would amplify that narrative dramatically. So it looks like it could be beneficial to Bitcoin in the long term, but in the short term, it definitely would cause another dip in the market.
Sure. No, I think it would be, if that's the case, then you think gold and silver is expensive now? Just wait.
Yeah.
Same with Bitcoin.
Absolutely. I think, but I think that may, you know, we were talking about possibly like another leg down. That could be the push.
That could be us finding our bottom, basically.
Yeah.
No, I think that's, definitely possible.
But yeah, I wish it was happier news, but yeah, it's just such a topsy-turvy time.
Yeah.
Tough to say, but I'll keep buying and I'll keep hodling.
That's right.
So anything else you wanted to add today?
Nothing else for me today.
Next week, what do you expect? Like when we record again, do you think we'll be up or down?
Down.
Down? Okay.
Generally speaking, down or sideways.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I mean, last week we were at 68. This week we're at 67. Maybe the next week, you know, if we kind of have a pop towards the end of the week, it'll be 66.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think we're going to be sideways and down for a little bit. I don't think we found that bottom yet. As much as I would love to just be like, oh man, I'm wrong. Bitcoin rallies up. I don't see it happening yet. There's too much economic uncertainty right now.
Absolutely.
So thank you all for listening. We will talk to you all again next week.
Bye.